1, 2, 3. Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, people? My name is Ian Hawley, filling in for Al Martin today here on Current Sports on AM 870 or 101.5 FM, WKAR. We got a good show for you here today. We're going to be talking about the NBA playoffs that are going on as we speak these past few days. And we'll also be recapping some of the NHL playoffs from Tuesday night's action. John Simon is here with me in the building today, filling in for my usual role as the current sports engineer. John, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Ian. I'm glad that you gave me some early recognition on it. I was wanting to see where you would go with that. He's sitting in for, well, me, actually. So, but yes, I'm very happy to be here behind the glass helping you out today and filling in for Alan. I think you're going to do another fantastic job today.
Hey, thank you for that. I'm going to go ahead and find some wood and knock on it just so I don't screw anything up today. But I think I'll be okay. I've been in this hot seat before, so I got my legs under me. We're going to be talking a little bit about Jordan Weber, who is the Olympic gold medal winning 2012 member of the Fierce Five gymnastics team. She has actually filed a suit against Larry Nassar and USA Gymnastics, the United States Olympic Committee, and Michigan State University. So we will bring you that news coming up here in a minute. And like I say, we'll be talking NBA playoffs and NHL playoffs for most of today's show. So sit back, relax, and let me and my partner John Simon give it to you in your eardrums, as Parliament would say. Let's start the show. We'll start here today with the news of Jordan Weber. Jordan Weber, a member of the gold medal winning 2012 Fierce Five gymnastics team, is the latest Olympian to file suit in the ongoing scandal involving former team doctor Larry Nassar. Weber has filed suit against USA Gymnastics, the United States Olympic Committee, and Michigan State University, the latest of many prominent gymnasts to charge that those organizations failed to take action while Nasser was allegedly committing acts of sexual abuse. Fellow gymnast Allie Raisman, Michaela Maroney, and Jamie Dansher have also filed suits against the organizations, charging that they failed to protect vulnerable gymnasts from Nasser. Maroney, in making a public statement against Nasser in January, could have been speaking for many of her fellow gymnasts when she said, quote, "I had a dream to go to the Olympics. The things I had to endure to get there were unnecessary and disgusting," end quote. Nasser was recently sentenced to up to 175 years on charges of sexual assault and also faces a 40 to 125-year sentence on the three other counts of sexual assault and a 60-year sentence for federal charges of child pornography. So, interesting news there. Jordan Weaver, the latest in the onslaught of suits against Larry Nasser and USA Gymnastics and Michigan State University. We will keep you updated on all of the things surrounding Larry Nasser as the weeks go on here at WKAR. Moving on, Michigan State baseball hits the road for the first time since March 25th, traveling to Kalamazoo to tangle with Western Michigan today in a 2 p.m. battle with the Broncos at WMU's Robert J. Bob Stadium at Hyams Field. MSU is playing its first road game since March 25th at Michigan, as the Spartans had an originally scheduled 12-game homestand that opened on March 28th against WMU, but have had three games postponed or canceled by weather. Today is the second meeting of the season between the Spartans and Broncos, with WMU winning the earlier matchup 6-1 on March 28th. All right, just to quickly recap the NBA playoff action from last night, the Toronto Raptors defeated the Washington Wizards by a score of 130-119. Toronto now has a 2-0 series lead. The Boston Celtics defeated the Milwaukee Bucks 120-106. Boston also has a 2-0 lead. And the New Orleans Pelicans defeated the Portland Trail Blazers 111-102. And New Orleans now also has a 2-0 lead. So, a few one-sided series, you might say. Although, pretty close in some of those games. And we'll go over that more in just a minute here. But for tonight, the Indiana Pacers will take on the Cleveland Cavaliers in Game 2 of that series. Indiana stole Game 1. And that game is taking place in Cleveland, actually. So, we'll see if LeBron and his group can turn things around against Victor Oladipo and the Pacers. Following that game, which will take place at 7 p.m., the Jazz and Thunder will play at 8 in Game 2 of their series. The Oklahoma City Thunder leads 1-0, and Russell Westbrook and Carmelo Anthony have looked phenomenal in this series so far. So we'll see what the rest of that series will hold. I'm particularly looking forward to that one tonight. And the Timberwolves and the Rockets will close out tonight's action at 9:30. Houston leads 1-0 in that series. And scary to see what James Harden and the Rockets did in that game one against the Timberwolves. I'm not sure how much of a shot the Timberwolves have, but we'll save my thoughts for later. Moving on, the NHL playoffs also had some action going on last night. The Capitals of Washington and the Blue Jackets of Columbus played last night in their Game 3, which went to overtime. All three games in that series have now gone to at least one overtime, which is phenomenal to watch. Went to two overtimes last night, and the Capitals ended up taking their first game of the series against the Blue Jackets, so Columbus now leads 2-1. The Winnipeg Jets defeated the Minnesota Wild last night 2-0. Winnipeg now leads that series 3-1. And the Vegas Golden Knights defeated the Los Angeles Kings. And so Vegas has swept the Kings and now won that series. And they'll look forward to round two action. Phenomenal to see what this Vegas team has been able to do. You know, they were the expansion team this year in the NHL. And to not only win your first playoff series, but to sweep, you know, one of the best teams in the past few years in the NHL, in the Los Angeles Kings, is just remarkable. So I'm looking forward to see what Vegas has going forward in this tournament. And NHL action going on tonight. The Pittsburgh Penguins will take on the Philadelphia Flyers at 7 p.m. Pittsburgh leads that series 2-1. The Tampa Bay Lightning will play the New Jersey Devils in Game 4 of that series at 7:30. Tampa Bay is currently up 2-1 in that series. The Nashville Predators will take on the Colorado Avalanche at 10 p.m. Nashville is up 2-1 in that series. And then the latest game for tonight is the cross-state rivalry between the Anaheim Ducks and the San Jose Sharks. Again, that game will be at 10:30, and San Jose is currently up 3-0, so a win for them tonight would secure the series victory over the Ducks. Last but not least, the Tigers, already subject to 6 weather-related postponements this season, have moved up the start time for today's game against the Orioles in an effort to avoid another rainout. Today's game is now scheduled for a 1:10 p.m. start, so I assume they've just gotten underway there, and moved up from an original start time of 6:40 p.m. The Tigers made the move after consulting with the O's as well as MLB, which has input on games when the visiting team isn't scheduled to come into town again. The Tigers are coming off a loss last weekend of games against the Yankees, with 2 games postponed due to all-day rain Saturday and an ice storm Sunday. While yesterday provided chilly but dry conditions, today's forecast calls for a strong chance of rain all evening, potentially turning into snow late. That's exactly what you wanted to hear if you live in Baltimore, right? Moving up, today's game time was preferable to risking another rainout, scheduling a doubleheader for Thursday. The weather looks really bad late in the afternoon, the Detroit manager Ron Gardenhire said. We don't want any more doubleheaders, and I don't think the Orioles do either. They've been through it too, so the right thing happened here. Move the game up to 1 o'clock and try to beat the weather. And I would agree with that statement from Mr. Gardenhire. The Tigers already have a day-night doubleheader scheduled for Friday against the Royals, making up a postponement from 2 weeks ago. The Orioles are scheduled to fly back to Baltimore tomorrow night for a homestand beginning Friday night. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, call 517-355-9527. Sorry we don't have the live stream up for you guys today. Al is currently out of town, attending to family business, and I am not that tech savvy, so we didn't have that set up for you guys. I'm sorry, Ben and the other guys who currently or who usually watch the live stream. But Al will be back tomorrow, never fear, and we'll have that Facebook live stream up and going for you. Thank you for tuning in. This is AM 870 and 101.5 FM WKAR. I'm your host, Ian Hawley, for the day, and let's get this show started. Start today's show. We'll be talking about the NBA playoff action that happened last night. Some interesting games that took place last night. The Toronto Raptors played against the Washington Wizards. And DeMar DeRozan, if I could spit that out, matched his career playoff high with 37 points. Jonas Valanciunas had 19 points and 14 rebounds of his own. And the Toronto Raptors defeated the Washington Wizards 130-119 last night as Toronto took a 2-0 lead in a playoff series for the first time in their franchise history. Exciting stuff for Toronto. Kyle Lowry had 13 points and a career playoff high 12 assists as Toronto set team playoff records for points in a quarter, points in a half, and points in a game. CJ Miles scored 18, DeLon Wright had 11 of his own, and Serge Ibaka had 10 for the Raptors, who snapped an NBA worst 10-game losing streak in game ones with a 114-106 win this past Saturday. DeMar DeRozan, whose 37th point came on a friendly roll on a fourth quarter free throw, equaled his total from game 3 of the second round against Cleveland last year. It was his 12th career 30-point game in the postseason. The Raptors are 9-3 when DeMar DeRozan scores more than 30 points in a postseason game. John Wall had 29 points. Mike Scott had a career playoff high for the Wizards at 20 points. And Ty Lawson had 14 of his own. But the Wizards just came up short. They actually were pretty close for some of this game. But the Wizards will now host Game 3 on Friday night. Wizards guard Bradley Beal missed 8 of his 11 shots and finished with only 9 points. Beal had more fouls in the first half with 3 than made baskets at 2. John Simon, did you watch any of the NBA playoffs last night, or were you more of a hockey guy last night?
I watched a little bit of both. This particular game I actually didn't really get to catch most of. I was more watching Boston and Milwaukee and then New Orleans, Portland. But for this series, I am a little surprised that Toronto came out of their home court with a 2-0 lead. I thought that they would definitely take one on Washington. But despite this being the 1-8 matchup in the Eastern Conference, I still thought that the Wizards had a chance to get a game on Toronto. But like I said, I didn't watch it. But just looking at the box score here, you know, a great effort from John Wall for the Washington Wizards. But you already touched on it. Bradley Beal, 9 points, 3 of 11 shooting. That's inexcusable. And then another thing that I noticed about Washington is all through the season, I never really thought that the Wizards bench had much to offer. But last night, you touched on Ian. Mike Scott, a career high, 20 points. You know, Kelly Oubre chipped in 14. Mahimi threw in 12. Newly signed point guard Ty Lawson even added in 14 on 4 of 10 shooting for Washington. So when the bench gives you that kind of effort, that should be a game that you should be able to take on the road. But because some of the starters didn't exactly play as well, like Bradley Beal, like Marcin Gortat, the Wizards just weren't able to do it. So I think it's going to be interesting. I don't think that they'll get swept, but I think taking the first two games at home was big for Toronto, and I think that they're going to take the rest of the series pretty easily.
I would agree. Toronto can now sit back comfortably with a two-game lead, knowing that they've got a little bit of a mental edge on the Wizards as well, who I agree probably should have won this game. Their shooting percentage was a little bit better from the three-point line, although Toronto took a few more shots, so that probably has something to do with it. But they were 42-86, the Wizards were, from the field goal mark for a total of 48.8% shooting. And the Raptors were 45-87 for 51% shooting. So there was not much separating these teams as far as the shooting mark goes. I would mostly put this loss on Bradley Beal if I had to pick one player for the Wizards to blame for this loss. It definitely wouldn't be John Wall. He played phenomenally last night. He had 4 rebounds, 3 of them defensive, 1 offensive. He had 9 assists, 4 turnovers, which was a team high, but when you're wheeling and dealing like that from the point guard position, it's pretty easy to throw an errant pass here and there. And the best stat of the night for John Wall was 11 for 11 from the free throw line, which is phenomenal. I know, you know, one of the highest touted guards in the league probably should make all of his free throws, right? But still, an impressive stat from John Wall. And the Raptors bench, other than C.J. Miles, didn't really give them much. Wright had 11 points, and the next highest scorer was Siakam with 6. So I agree. Washington probably should have stolen this game from Toronto, but just based on the way that their starters played and the way DeMar DeRozan absolutely went off last night, it's hard to beat a performance like that if you're Washington. Moving on here, we'll talk about the Celtics and the Bucks next. Jaylen Brown had a playoff career high 30 points, and the Celtics pulled away in the second half to earn a 120-106 win over the Bucks last night. Terry Rozier added 23 points, and Game 3 is scheduled for Friday in Milwaukee. The Celtics led by as many as 20 in the fourth quarter as their ball movement completely overwhelmed the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, Brown, who is in his second year, said right now the Celtics are feeling, quote, confident as ever. He went on to say, people have been writing us off all year, and we just keep proving people wrong, so that's what we're going to keep doing. Milwaukee got as close as 107-97 with 4 minutes and 13 seconds left to play, but the Celtics responded with an 11-2 run, capped by a banked-in three-pointer by Jaylen Brown to push their lead back up to 118-99. Giannis Antetokounmpo finished with 30 points, 9 rebounds, and 8 assists, a fantastic performance in the loss from Giannis, although what do you really expect? And Chris Middleton of the Bucks added 25 points of his own. However, turnovers were really the issue that killed Milwaukee for the second straight game. The Bucks finished with 15 turnovers, leading to 21 Boston points. They also shot just 41% from the free throw line, 7-for-17 as a team. And John, I know you said you watched this game. Any thoughts on the way the Celtics have been handling the Bucks here? I would say, in my opinion, it's more of Milwaukee hurting themselves with turnovers, but I want to know what you have to say on this subject.
It's a little bit of both. I thought it was funny. Which Celtics player was it that said that everybody's been counting them out all year? Was it Terry Rozier?
You said Jaylen Brown.
It was Brown. See, I've become a huge fan of Jaylen Brown, and I'll touch on it real quick. It's funny. Growing up, I never liked the Boston Celtics. I kind of grew up somewhat of a Knicks fan. They were always bad, so it didn't really matter. But this is one of the more likable basketball teams in the NBA that I've seen over the last couple of years. And last night I realized that I found myself rooting for the Boston Celtics. This team is so likable. And you know what? I'll give it to Jaylen Brown. A lot of people have written off Boston. I've heard a lot of people saying that they're possibly the worst 2 seed of all time, that they've got no shot of winning this series without Kyrie Irving. And I know that that's completely untrue because, like you said, Ian, the Bucks are giving these games away. But also, Boston's pretty resilient. You know, the turnovers hurt. But Milwaukee, as much length as they have with the guys like Giannis and Chris Middleton and John Henson and Jabari Parker, they have a terrible, terrible time rebounding the ball. They have a tough time doing that, and that's one thing that Boston loves to beat teams with rebounding. But overall, this game was fantastic. Jaylen Brown and Terry Rozier, I mean, Tatum too, he only had 4 points last night, but these three along with Al Horford have just stepped up so much even before the playoffs when Kyrie got hurt. I think Rozier is playing just as good a basketball as any other point guard in these playoffs. So this is another series where I thought Milwaukee had a good chance, like Washington, to get one of the two games on the road against the top seed. But with the home team taking two, I think this is another series that's on its way to being a gentleman's sweep in 5 games.
Wow. So a big prediction there from today's current sports engineer, John Simon. He thinks Boston will win this in 5 games.
Yeah, and the other thing is it's Stevens coaching. I mean, the Bucks had Jason Kidd, who got fired midway through the season. I'm not amazed that they got into the playoffs. They have Giannis Antetokounmpo. They should get in. But the way that Stevens has coached this whole year, I think he's very much a candidate for Coach of the Year, should be a top consideration for it. Just the way that he has this team playing well, like you said, their ball movement's fantastic. Everyone's playing at the top of their game, and they're doing it all without Kyrie Irving. So I think, you know, with this series win, if Boston can win this and maybe even get to the conference finals, you know, that's a real testament to Brad Stevens coaching.
I agree. And like you say, playing without Kyrie Irving, it's amazing to see some of these players step up in his absence. Al Horford had a phenomenal game in game one to help Boston pull out this the early lead in the series. And he had 16 points last night as well in 35 minutes. He actually made a three-point field goal, his only attempt. And he added 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals to that stat line while committing no turnovers and only 2 fouls. So Al Horford, a big contributor for this team. Jaylen Brown, 30 points, led all scorers, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Tied with Giannis, actually, for 30 points. Terry Rozier added 23, and it's nice to see some of these younger guys stepping up in the absence of Kyrie Irving. And I agree that that goes a long way, or says a lot about Brad Stevens' coaching and his ability to really pull this group together even when they take such a big loss.
They're the youngest team too in the playoffs. The Celtics' average age is just a hair under 25 years old, so they've got a lot of young guys in there too. That's just another thing. It's a whole new team from last year. Everybody knows Boston made it to the conference finals, but they had a complete turnover almost. Like, the really the only guys left are Marcus Smart, who's hurt, and then Al Horford, who, like you said, has been playing just simply fantastic basketball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very consistent from Al Horford, like I say. And Brad Stevens, one of the youngest coaches, I believe, in the NBA playoffs right now as well. So it says a lot about him and his ability to pull this group together and really guide them against, honestly, on paper, one of the better teams that I see in these playoffs. I think the Boston Celtics kind of got unlucky drawing the Bucks in the first round, but they've been able to handle them so far in this series, in which they are up 2-0. Like I say, Friday night will be the next game between the Bucks and the Celtics. And now we will move on to the last NBA playoff game from last night, the New Orleans Pelicans versus the Portland Trailblazers. While the Blazers found solutions for their shooting struggles in game one, they couldn't find a way to stop New Orleans Stars in a 111-102 Pelicans victory that gave New Orleans a commanding 2-0 lead in this series. Although Anthony Davis was his usual double-double self, scoring 22 points and adding 13 rebounds, and Rajon Rondo finished an assist away from a triple-double with 16, 10 rebounds, and 9 assists, in another strong playoff performance, this night actually belonged to Jrue Holiday. When the Blazers were able to get their sellout crowd going, it was Holiday to whom head coach Alvin Gentry turned to slow down the Pelicans' usual fast pace and ensure a good shot. Taking advantage of New Orleans' strong floor spacing, Holiday got wherever he wanted off the pick and roll, repeatedly reaching the paint to either finish himself or find an open teammate. According to ESPN stats and information tracking, Holiday's 19 drives yielded 14 points on 7 of 12 shooting by himself and 7 points on 3 of 4 shooting by teammates. Holiday scored 20 of his 33 points in the restricted area, shooting 10 of 14 on those attempts, and he handed out 9 assists. At the other end of the court, Holiday took a leading role as New Orleans again contained Damian Lillard. While the Blazers got excellent production from role players Al-Farouq Aminu, Zach Collins, and Maurice Harkless, as well as 22 points from C.J. McCollum, Lillard struggled to make the playoffs Dame time. He finished with 17 points on 7 of 18 shooting, including 6 misses on his 7 three-point attempts. Lillard was particularly inaccurate when defended by Holiday, missing all 4 of his shot attempts. He's 0 for 8 with Holiday as a primary defender in the series, and Damian Lillard also committed a pair of turnovers last night. So again, struggling guard play led to a downfall in this game, just as we saw with the Raptors and the Wizards in Bradley Beal. I believe that Damian Lillard's struggles have been the story in this series, and obviously it has a lot to do with Jrue Holiday. John Simon, you said you watched this game. What were your thoughts on this second game for the Pelicans and the Blazers?
Yeah, I definitely caught pretty much all of this game, and you hit the nail right on the head when you said the night belonged to Jrue Holiday. And to start off with him, just a really cool story to hear about. I mean, if you didn't know, and for people listening who didn't know, last year Jrue Holiday stepped away from the NBA. He left the Pelicans. He went home to go take care of his wife, who was very, very sick, and he didn't know when he was going to be playing basketball again. And to see him come back and play well for this team and, you know, find his role and really taking over being the second best player on the team with DeMarcus Cousins being hurt, I think it's just a really cool story. And I've always been a Jrue Holiday fan, even from his days back in Philly. He's always been a good player, and it's finally nice to see him getting some recognition. But aside from Holiday, well, no, sticking with Holiday, this was an interesting matchup for me, Ian, going into the playoffs, this Portland, New Orleans teams, because Portland's got that great guard duo of Lillard and McCollum. And on the other hand, Portland or New Orleans has Anthony Davis. So I was interested to see one of these teams has to stop the other unstoppable force. And right now, Holiday and Rondo, the two guards for the Pelicans, are doing an incredible job of just locking up McCollum and Lillard. They are not playing with space. They're not playing, you know, in their rhythm. Just Lillard, or no, not Lillard. Holiday and Rondo have done a fantastic job defensively guarding Portland's front backcourt, and that's translated to their great offensive play. And when you look at Anthony Davis, he didn't even have a crazy game last night, but you can just tell night in and night out, Portland doesn't have an answer for him.
I would agree. Rondo and Holiday have done a very good job on that guard duo in McCollum and Lillard, as you said. And the Pelicans have been pretty shorthanded here. They've got Jamal Crawford out, Liggins is out, and Okafor is also out, all on coaches' decisions from last night's game. And Jackson has a broken right foot right now for the Pelicans. So a pretty slim bench right now for New Orleans, but they're still finding ways to get it done. Miller had 0 points last night off the bench for them, but Diallo had 2, Hill had 3, and Clark had 10. So they had a little bit of production from their bench there. And Holiday and Davis, specifically, kind of carried this team last night. Mirotić had 16 points and 11 rebounds, so no small game for Mirotić there either. Don't want to leave him out. But Rondo only went 3 for 9 from the field, 0 for 1 from the three-point line, for a total of 6 points, although he did have 8 rebounds and a whopping 17 assists. So even when these guys aren't necessarily getting it done on the scoreboard, they're still finding ways to contribute and to help their team get past this this rough Portland Trailblazers team, who most teams in the West would not want to face right now. All right, we're going to take our first break here. When we come back, we'll continue with our discussion on the playoffs, although we will transfer sports and transition to the NHL playoffs. We'll recap some of these games from last night, the Capitals and Blue Jackets, the Jets and the Wild, the Vegas Golden Knights, and the Kings as well. And we might even look ahead to some of the games coming up tonight. There should be some pretty good matchups tonight. So we'll be right back. You're listening to AM 870 and 101.5 FM. This is Current Sports on WKAR. All right, and we're back here on Current Sports. My name is Ian Hawley, and I'm filling in for Al Martin today as he is away on some family business. We just talked about the NBA playoff action from last night and some pretty good games there. We had the Toronto Raptors playing the Washington Wizards, the Boston Celtics taking on the Milwaukee Bucks, and the New Orleans Pelicans defeating the Portland Trailblazers. But now we're going to transition here There were more playoffs on last night, but this time in the NHL. And so we'll start with some action from the Capitals and the Blue Jackets. And Washington has actually found their first win in the series last night in Game 3. And every game in this series has gone to overtime, at least one overtime. This one last night went to two. And the Washington Capitals captured that victory by a score of 3-2 over the Columbus Blue Jackets, who now lead 2-1 in the overall series. The next game is scheduled for tomorrow at 7:30 p.m. at the Nationwide Arena. Despite blowing another lead, Washington heads into Game 4 trailing Columbus by just one after a very strange double overtime goal by Lars Eller. Brandon Holtby walked out to the Capitals bench an hour before puck drop Tuesday night, carrying his stick with him. He leaned his forearm and chin on the blade, staring at an empty sheet of ice in an empty arena. It's a pregame ritual when he starts, a peaceful few minutes before he is the last line of defense for what can often be chaos in front of him. So Holtby is one of the defensemen for the Washington Capitals, and he's been particularly good for them in this series. And the Capitals have struggled historically in the playoffs, only making it out of the second round about 25 years, I believe it's been, since the last time they made it out of the second round of the playoffs. Also last night, we had the Winnipeg Jets playing against the Minnesota Wild, who they defeated by a score of 2-0, and Winnipeg now leads 3-1 in that series. And the Las Vegas Golden Knights have swept the Los Angeles Kings. They won Game 4 last night by a score of 1-0. So very cool stuff there from the Vegas Golden Knights, getting their first ever playoff series win in their inaugural season as a team. Let's stick with this Columbus Blue Jackets and Washington Capitals game. In the first period, the Jackets opened the game flying, with Atkinson deflecting a shot just wide of the mark seconds into the game. Game started pretty choppy, with neither team possessing the puck very well and several icing calls in the first few minutes. Washington gained some momentum after the first few shifts, but were unable to generate a good shot on Bobrovsky in the first period. Both teams seemed to settle down after some early hectic minutes. You kind of got the sense watching this game that the first goal was going to be huge for whichever team got it. The first penalty of the game came as human trash can Tom Wilson. That's a, it's kind of a ridiculous nickname, but I guess I would stick with it if I had to. Tom Wilson went off for high-sticking Pierre-Luc Dubois in the face. The Jackets generated no shots on goal as Washington was able to kill the penalty. Actually kind of a bad power play from the Columbus Blue Jackets there. Immediately after, Josh Anderson took an interference penalty, putting the Jackets down a man for the first time. Columbus's penalty kill has been lacking of late. Bobrovsky made a big pad save halfway through the penalty to keep it scoreless, and a monster kill kept the game scoreless as Anderson returned to the ice. The Jackets passed their first big test of the night on that power play. The period ended at a tie, 0-0. Shots favored Washington 10-9. In the second period, Washington made it 2-0 pretty quickly. Josh Anderson had a beautiful chance with 75 seconds gone. To be quite honest with you, I don't know how he didn't score, but he waited and waited and just couldn't bury it. It actually clanked off the goalpost. The Jackets bent back to the kill at the 2:15 mark as they were called for too many men in the defensive zone. Somehow that happened. The Jackets had a couple shorthanded chances, but were denied. For the second time, Columbus killed a Washington penalty. Washington opened up the scoring on a Matt Niskanen wrister early in the second and was able to capitalize off a deflection from Tom Wilson as the first line was able to get on the board with 5:02 gone. Again, like I say, they made it 2-0 pretty early as a scramble around the net allowed Brett Connolly to bury the puck after a sprawling Sergei Bobrovsky with 8:09 gone in the second. So 2-0 at that point for the Washington Capitals. But finally, the Jackets got on the board after taking a feed from Artemi, quote-unquote, God Panarin, another interesting nickname there. Dubois for the Columbus Blue Jackets was finally able to fire it high glove side to equalize with 8:42 remaining. A great shot from the rookie, Pierre-Luc Dubois. So after two periods, Columbus trailed 2-1. Shots favored Washington 25-16. And then the Jackets opened up the third period with a pretty good push. At 4:12, Artemi Panarin equalized 2-2. And Columbus flat out took over after Panarin's goal. And the arena, of course, went nuts. It was very cool to watch. Ovechkin was fine, but he stayed on the bench, and the Jackets went to the power play. Ovechkin got hit in the head with a puck, but he was fine. He stayed on the bench for a while. Jackets went to a power play after that, but were unable to find the go-ahead goal, and they ended up remaining tied until the second overtime period. Washington finally scored. The goal was reviewed for a distinct kicking motion, but finally counted. So the Washington Capitals ended up taking that game 3-2 over the Columbus Blue Jackets. John, did you watch any of this game last night?
Yeah, I got to catch a little bit of it. And one of my good friends here at Michigan State is from Maryland, so he's kind of a big Capitals fan, or he at least pretends to be. But simply put, this was a must-win for Washington. It's not a smart strategy to usually drop your first two games of a series at home. But like you said, it's been a tough series. Every game's gone to at least one overtime. But the Capitals are able to find a way to get back in this series with a double OT win in Columbus. Holtby, returning to the net for them, played a great game. Did not start the first two games, which a lot of people in Washington were not happy about. And I think that they finally got to Bobrovsky because they've been peltering this guy with shots through the first three games of the series. I mean, in game two, they lost to Columbus at home, but they still put up almost 60 shots on net. So getting over the hump, getting this first win is very big for the Capitals. It'll be tough to even up the series, winning the second road game in Columbus as well. But hey, the Blue Jackets won two games straight in your building. There's no better way to, you know, come right back at them by taking two in theirs.
I agree. It'll be interesting to see where this series goes. One of the more evenly matched series that we've seen so far. A lot of other, you know, 2-0, 3-0 series right now. Including that Vegas series that actually went to a sweep last night as they swept the Los Angeles Kings. But we'll get there in a minute. We'll stick with the Winnipeg Jets and the Minnesota Wild game from last night for the moment. It was far from a dominant performance, but a stellar defense and goaltending by the Jets was good enough to earn them a 2-0 win and a dominant 3-1 lead in this Western Conference quarterfinal. Mark Schifele, excuse me if I pronounced that
Shifley.
Word. Mark Shifley.
There you go.
scored a first period goal that came as a result of relentless pressure from the Jets' top line. Offensive changes were few and far between before and after that point, as this was a very tight checking game. The Jets were outshot 30-28, with Minnesota only generating a few true chances, the most obvious of which was on a 3-on-1 in which Connor Hellebuyck came across to rob Matt Dumba blind. It was the first career playoff shutout for Connor Hellebuyck and came just hours after he was named a finalist for the Vezina Trophy for his regular season performance. For the Wild, Devin Dubnyk turned aside 26 of 27 shots and remains the best performer for Minnesota thus far. Mikko Koivu led the Wild with 4 shots on goal, and Scheifele put this one to bed with an empty net goal with 11 seconds left. So a good win here for the Winnipeg Jets to take a 3-1 lead in this series, and not allowing Minnesota to come back and tie it up, moving on to Game 5. The Jets were extremely lucky to escape on a 5-on-3 penalty kill scenario late in the first period when a pretty obvious cross-check by Josh Morrissey to the neck of Eric Staal went uncalled. Staal shook it off after a brief trip to the bench, but he was pretty upset about it. So hopefully we'll see some repercussions for Josh Morrissey on that after, post-game for that hit on Eric Staal, because I actually saw the highlight of that one, and that one looked pretty brutal. Anytime you take a cross-check, it's not going to feel too good, especially if it's on an unpadded area, but one directly to the neck like that is just about the worst place you can take one. So hopefully Staal will be okay from that. He looked pretty good coming back out after he took that check, but scary moment there early in the game. The Wild, after dominant performances on home ice with last change in Game 1 and 2, there is a major opportunity for the Jets to put this one away here in Game 5, as they will now return home to Winnipeg for the final game of this series. Last but not least, we will move on to the Las Vegas Golden Knights and their win over the Los Angeles Kings to give them their first ever series win in their first ever playoff series, which is pretty exciting. The fans out in Las Vegas have to be going wild for their young team here, which I myself didn't expect to do at this well. I predicted maybe they would make the playoffs with some of the picks that they got in that expansion draft, but to go out and beat the Los Angeles Kings and sweep them is very impressive for any team, let alone a team that has been around for less than a season now. The two teams who defied expectations to get into the playoffs, the Kings, who were predicted to miss the postseason with their aging core and years of declining returns, and the Golden Knights, who were predicted to follow the same mold of all past expansion teams and be a bottom feeder in the league. Both of those teams started the season as pleasant surprises to onlookers. The Kings started the season on an 8-1-1 tear, or 11-2-2 if you want to take it out further, before some of the cracks started to show. The Golden Knights wowed the hockey world with an 8-2-0 start, and despite injuries necessitating an absurd carousel of goals, including 19-year-old Dylan Ferguson, emergency recalled from his juniors team, Vegas kept rolling all season long. One team walked into the playoffs on a tear and never quite looked back, and that team was not the Kings. The Kings' full team shooting percentage over the series is just 1%. Tyler Toffoli led the team with 17 shots, including 3 in that game last night. Dustin Brown had 15, including 6 last night. And Jeff Carter had 3 last night as well. None were rewarded at any point in the series. 42.4% is the number of one-goal games the Kings won during the regular season. That's 22nd in the league. Sitting in the top 10 in that category is the Las Vegas Golden Knights. Number of shots the Kings took over 4 games was 130, and they only scored 3 goals. Jonathan Quick played some of the finest hockey of his career in the series. Particularly in Las Vegas, he withstood a barrage of shots from the Golden Knights and kept the Kings in the game every single night. He absolutely deserved a better performance from the team in front of him, and yet every night his team was unable to provide him with any goal support whatsoever. So disappointing for Jonathan Quick and the Kings, who I expect to be back next season. They had a little bit of a down year this year, but still a pretty good run from them. And obviously very impressive from the Las Vegas Golden Knights, who will move on and await their next competitor in the second round of the NHL playoffs. John Simon, did you watch this game?
I got to catch the ending of it, Ian. First, Golden Knights just making more history this year. They're actually the first NHL franchise ever to sweep a playoff series in their inaugural season. So with it being the first playoff series when it was also a sweep, of course, first time ever for a team in their first season to do so in the playoffs. But I was in the same boat as you, Ian. I, at the beginning of the season, back in the summer, I really wasn't sure how good the Golden Knights were going to be. I thought that they brought in a good mix of young players and veterans to a point where they could possibly compete for the playoffs. I definitely didn't see them getting one of the top seeds like they did. However, fast forward from the summer to about a week ago when the playoffs started. I first did not think that they were going to beat the Kings. I thought the Kings have experience. They've been there. As you mentioned, they've gone on runs before. They've won a couple Stanley Cups. Their whole core from those cup-winning teams is still pretty much there. So I thought that these guys with their experience would at least get a first-round victory over the Knights. That didn't happen. I didn't think that they would win the series. I definitely didn't think that they would come out and sweep. So I didn't get to see much of this series. I got to catch the last 10-12 minutes of the game last night, but at this point I really don't think I can count this Vegas team out of anything, Ian.
Yeah, they've looked fantastic in this series as a team, and I'm excited to see what they will continue to do going forward. All right, we're going to take our second break here. When we come back, we will close up our show. This is Ian Hawley filling in for Al Martin here on AM 870 and 101.5 FM WKAR. We'll be right back. All right, we're back here on WKAR, AM 870, and 101.5 FM. My name is Ian Hawley, filling in for Al Martin today, as he is away. And we've been talking NBA and NHL playoffs here on today's Current Sports. If you'd like to call in and give your comments on any of the games that have happened in the past couple days, be my guest. Our number is 517-355-9527, and I believe we have a caller on the line right now. Ray from Indiana is calling
Ian.
Into yes sir Ray, how are you?
I got done jogging. I heard from Jim Harbaugh.
Oh, really?
He said before he canceled that spring game, he had the whole university alumni and support get behind him and the football players and say, you have a right to see a one winning program before you leave school, so we're going to watch the Buckeyes today on TV.
You think that's why they canceled the game instead? It had nothing to do with weather, right?
Ah, that's beautiful. And also, I got news from Tommy Brady. He's over in a foreign country. He ain't going to his. He's not. He don't like Bill Belichick no more. So he had his boy out there, and he on the ocean. He had a football up there, and he kicked it 40 yards over his head, 10 yards over his head. So he's practicing for the kick, punt, and pass contest. You know, he dropped the football a couple of times in the Super Bowl, so he's got to get all the work he can get in.
Yeah, you think he's got to sign up for a new position now?
Yeah, kick, punt, and pass contest. Him and his boy are going to get into it next year. Won't that be nice?
That would be very interesting to see. I would love to see something like that from Tom.
All right, my man. Take care.
All right, Ray. Have a good rest of your day.
Yep.
Ray from Indiana, one of our usual guests on this show, Always got some colorful commentary about the University of Michigan and the Patriots and old Tommy Boy as well. Like I say, we've been talking about the NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs today. If you'd like to call in and be part of our show here in the last couple minutes, our number is 517-355-9527. And you can give your thoughts about, you know, my hosting, John's engineering. We'd love to take some feedback from you, as well as any of the playoff games that have been going on in the NHL and the MLB, or the NBA, excuse me, this week.
Wow. And speaking of those, Ian, I mean, we got a couple minutes left, and we've touched on all the games from last night. Why don't we just run through real quick predictions for tonight, see what happens in the games this evening in the NHL and the NBA?
Sounds like a plan to me, man. We'll start with the NBA. We've got the Pacers and the Cavs opening up tonight's action at 7 p.m. And Indiana is currently up 1-0 in that series. And to be quite honest with you, I don't see it getting any better for LeBron and the Cavaliers. I think he's just not got the pieces around him that he's had in the past to go on some of these deep runs. It reminds me of one of the early Cavaliers teams that LeBron was on where he had to kind of put the team on his back. And obviously he's had a lot more experience doing that now. But this Pacers team, if they get firing on all cylinders like they were in Game 1, it's going to be very hard for LeBron to top the Indiana Pacers. What do you think?
I think Cleveland gets back into the series. I think the Cavs were a little overwhelmed in Game 1. I think the Pacers just came out firing. I don't think the Pacers will not play as well as they did in Game 1. I think they continue to play that well, but when it comes to the Cavaliers and when it comes to LeBron James, I will not count them out until they've actually lost that fourth game in an Eastern Conference series. I'll count them out against Golden State any day of the week and twice on Sunday, but when it comes to the playoffs in the East, I'm not counting LeBron and his team out until they've actually lost that elimination game. So I think the Cavs take Game 2 tonight. They even up the series and they head to Indiana, you know, a little bit back on their feet. But I definitely see this Indiana-Cleveland series going 6 or 7 games.
I could see that for sure. I think the Cavs will pull out Game 2 tonight at home. I don't think LeBron will let them take another one on his floor, but traveling to Indiana, it's going to be very tough for the LeBron and the Cavs to pick up a win. He's never been down 1-0 in an opening series before, but then again, no team had ever come back from a 3-1 finals deficit and won, and LeBron has accomplished that now. So as you say, John, anything is possible for LeBron in the Eastern Conference playoffs.
Correct.
Game 2 between the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Utah Jazz will take place tonight at 8 p.m. The Thunder are currently up 1-0 in that series. And to be quite honest with you, John, I see Russell Westbrook going absolutely insane for the rest of this series. You know,